Thank you very much, honorable members. I don't think there's any reason to delay any further. Today, honorable members, we expect to be entertained by the compensation fund on the matter that requested them to come and talk to us in relation to the top 20 companies that were misbehaving. And also we requested the SEE to really come and explain themselves why it looks like they are not moving, and the challenges that they may be having, and then whether they've got any turnaround, whatever. I think those are the two briefings that you're going to receive. And I hope honorable members have got the copy of the agenda. And on the agenda is that we'll be starting with our one set of minutes. Then from there, then we get to compensation fund. Then from there is SEE. Our the delegation that we have here, we have got the acting DG, Vuyo Mafata is here. And then we have got an acting CEO for SEE, Morotova is here. Then we have got Ngongo. Then Lumungane. Umo Zelane. Umo Manamela. Umo. Then we also have Jeffrey Boysen. Jeffrey Boysen is here. And then we have got Dino Sass is here. Then we have got Tibo Zan. I hope that I've pronounced it correctly. Then we have got Matapelo is here. Advocate in Kegi, I'm sure, is still looking for the way to here. I think it's becoming chronic for the Advocate in Kegi to arrive when everybody have arrived and started. This is this is a delegation that we have, and it's just unfortunate, we just need to indicate that our screens are not working, all of them. I don't know whether it's a sign of anything, but they're just simply not working, both of them. And then we only have one that's working this side, and the arrangement is that the one that presents, they will see that side so that he can be able to speak to the screen. And the honorable members, all of them, we have requested them to be on my left to be able to see on the screen. But of course, that each and every honorable member, we expect that it may be having a hard copy. Apologies, Sergeant.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and good morning to the members and the departmental delegation that is here. Chair, I've received two apologies from Honorable Mutambi, who is still off sick, and Mr. Mudeka, and also I received from our content advisor, Mr. Ngobo, who is also off sick. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks. I think, yeah.
Sorry, Chair, one more. I also received an apology from Honorable Togwane. She's attending Agriculture Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think Honorable Farai, I think, is rushing to a doctor. In any way, he's an alternate member. Honorable members, that takes us to the next item that deals with the agenda, I have just tried to explain the agenda. We're starting with the draft minutes of last week. Then we deal with the compensation fund on the inspectorate. Then we deal with SEE. I'm putting the agenda in front of yourselves, honorable members. Honorable Bertram, your comment?
I propose.
Are you proposing? Anyone who supports Honorable Bertram, Honorable Van Schalkwyk?
I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. And then that then takes us to the set of minutes of the 27th of February. I hope that you have got copies of that. The meeting that was held here with one screen, of course. On page one, no comment. Page two, page three. Page 3 is the last one. Anybody that is happy about the minutes then? Honorable Bertram?
I propose.
Honorable Bertram proposed for the adoption of the set of minutes. Honorable Mjovo? Can I hear your word?
Seconded.
Honorable Mjovo. Anyone that has got problems for us to adopt the set of minutes? None. Minutes duly adopted. Then, honorable members, then that takes us to compensation fund, the inspectorate. And I hope that we have got the presentations, all of us, or we had an opportunity to have a look at them. And then we will then get to proceed to present. Unfortunately, that many of the slides, honorable members, is pictures and numbers, and then with no narratives that highlights certain things on the slides. We hope that the presenter then will talk to them. The unfortunate thing is that after talking to them, when he goes home, he will be going with those narratives, and you may be forced to take serious notes on the slides so that you retain some. But I think it's in future, of course, it's I don't know what that future holds for others. Is that when you have got a table, then you just need to put a small paragraph underneath and just speak to the table a little bit, and especially something that you are noting or you are observing on the table, or something, the message that you can communicate out of the table, and then it makes the tables to be readable. You may proceed if you are ready. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. The comments are noted, and I would like to tender an apology for the fact that there's no narrative that was added. I am prepared to put to post this meeting. I'm prepared to put a report together on that, on the actual presentation. The presentation that we are going to look at is for the past quarter. We're going to look at the injuries in the workplaces, the inspections, and some of the prosecutions, highlighting one specific company. Of course, it was noted that there were a number of injuries that had taken place that was reported, and then there are different sectors that have been noted with regard to the information that Compensation Fund has. There were different companies. What has been noted there is the retail sector, which has reported quite a high number of incidents versus the non-retail sector. If you look at the number of injuries that have been reported in the retail sector specifically, it is as a ratio far higher than that for the non-retail sector. You have the gender in the on the retail and wholesale side, the breakup there, the injuries per province noted there, and then the top five companies. I've specifically noted ShopRite, which I will speak to in a moment, and you'll notice that in terms of that old graph there, there are three retail sectors that form the top five and two non-retail two non-retail companies. But if you look at the actual pie chart there, you'll see that ShopRite is by far the biggest or forms the greatest part of the actual number of claims that have been registered. Now, while, and this will be noted, while ShopRite and the other companies are detailing a high number of claims, the claims itself are not of a, what we would deem a serious nature in terms of people losing their life necessarily, or an appendage, an arm or a leg or something like that, if you look at the detail in terms of the incidents that have been reported. So then, if you look at the types of injuries that are taking place, the right thumb, for example, the right middle finger, left middle index finger, and so on, and if you analyze this, there's simple issues that are actually happening at the workplace that's leading to these sort of injuries. Of course, when you start looking at the head injury, it becomes a lot more serious, or even the back injury. Then you are looking at clear problems at that company. One of the companies that I then visited, because of the high number of incidents that were taking place, I specifically targeted ShopRite Checkers, and went again. I set up a meeting with the top management within ShopRite Checkers, and I indicated exactly the figures that we have, and we explained the problem that we have with regard to the types of claims that they are putting forward, and then requested them to tell us what they are going to do about this and how they are going to address it. And subsequent to that, ShopRite Checkers has been putting in place various structures and so on in order to deal with this. There's been a revamp in the organization, apparently, in terms of addressing these issues that we have identified with them. We also put on the table to them that they must come back to us when they are confident enough so that we can look at what they are paying in terms of their claims, if they can reduce the injuries that they are having over a certain period. We will really look at and speak to the Compensation Commissioner, or they can apply to the Compensation Commissioner in terms of their, what they are paying. The actions then that we took then, as I've indicated, was that we had basically brought the senior management to the table for them to address the matters that we had pointed out. If you look at one specific set of inspections that was done in the Western Cape specifically, and this is just a draw out of something that I'll explain in a moment as well, you'll see the compliance rate for ShopRite Checkers was quite low. You'll see on this graph, on this table here, the level of compliance was at 37%. And when you take the compliance level at 37% and you go back to the pie chart that I had spoken to a moment ago, you then begin to understand why they are having the high number of incidents that they are that are taking place there. And it's not just a high number. If you look at the numbers that are coming out of ShopRite Checkers, it forms the greater part of the incidents if you look across the sectors for the injuries. So a total number of contraventions, you are at 58, Chairperson, which is quite high, and then I'll go into the detail of the type of contraventions that were picked up and some of the possible problems as to why this is taking place. So out of those inspections that were done that I pointed out to you a moment ago, if I can go through it, the general duties of an employer, those are duties that an employer has to ensure that their premises or their workplaces are healthy and safe. And we picked up four contraventions there. If you look at section 17, there were two contraventions there. The significance of that is it talks to a structure. If there's no health and safety representative at the workplace, it is indicating to you that there's a breakdown in the structure, and you cannot expect the employer to then comply with health and safety on site because that is missing. It doesn't exist. So that would be a problem for us. And in such instances, we look at prosecutions. If you look at the next one, not so big, but it does allow the workers to have access to a copy of the Occupational Health and Safety Act and its regulations. There were nine of those that were picked up. Negotiations and consultations deals with the appointment of health and safety reps, and there were five of those issues picked up. And then, as you can see, designation of health and safety reps, there were three. Recording of investigations, there's no registers available, so it's very possible that the incidents are not being recorded at the workplace, which would be a problem for us, because incidents need to be investigated by an employer to prevent a recurrence. Now, General Safety Regulation 2, that is GSR 2, speaks to the fact that the employer is not providing safety equipment or personal protective equipment, and that would be a challenge for us. Obviously, if the worker is not given the PPE or the personal protective equipment, it means that they don't have any protection for whatever they're going to face at the workplace. And if we take a simple issue, the injury of the hand or the injury of a finger could mean that there was no safety glove involved there. And that would be a challenge for us because the fact that you're having an injury to the hand, there's a possibility that there should have been a glove involved. If it's the feet, it could be that there was no safety shoe involved, and so on and so on. First aid and emergency equipment, that could be that there was nothing available or that all the equipment that's supposed to be in the first aid box was not there. And so on. Working in elevated positions in the wholesale and retail sector, working at height would be a challenge, so the worker would need to be working at in such a way that they are protected while they're working at height, and in this case that would not have been the case. Stacking of articles, there's a certain way that is acceptable when you're stacking things, whether or not you're stacking on racking or you are stacking on freestanding stacks, they picked up a challenge there. And we would, in the retail and wholesale sector, that would be one of the big issues that you'd have, because a stack that is unsecure would possibly fall and hurt someone in a number of ways. If we look at the next one, housekeeping, poor housekeeping leads to injuries. So they picked up four issues there. Fire precautions and means of egress means the possibility that where people are required to exit an area, that area was blocked off or there were things stacked in front of that area and so on. And we know what happens in the event of a fire in a warehouse, as an example, that could lead to fatalities. Sanitation, one item was picked up there. Facilities for safekeeping, that is where people can take their clothing that they have or any other item and put it into a so-called locker, as we sometimes loosely refer to it. Dining rooms, the availability of it, the suitability of it would come under this one, and there were two issues that were picked up there. Conditions of rooms and facilities, we require a place that is clean, hygienic and leak-free. And they picked up five items where there would be problems in this regard. And then, Honorable Chairperson, in this particular instance, they picked up two prosecutions, and in the sector generally, obviously, there would be more. If I can just expand a bit, Honorable Chairperson and members, over the past three quarters, if you look at the following tables, and forgive me that it's so small, we tried to fit everything onto this first one. If I may just briefly speak to this chairperson, you'll see that in quarter one, the types of sectors that the inspectors were engaged in, for example, at the top, it's the wholesale and retail sector, which is the one that we are talking to where there are problems, and you'll see that there were a number of inspections that were done there. The other area that was picked up, which worldwide is a big problem, is the forestry sector. Under agriculture and forestry, you'll see that we spent quite a bit of time there in terms of inspections in this past period. An area that we do spend a lot of time in, Honorable Chairperson, is the construction sector, which is, in our opinion, a very high-risk sector, given the number of incidents that take place there. And we sometimes spend as much as 70% of our time in the sector with the types of challenges that we are picking up. Normally, our top three is also in the iron and steel, and I've touched on construction, and also sometimes the chemical sector does show its head up. And that is almost at the end of the table, the chemical sector. You can see some of the inspections that were done there. And those are for the different provinces, honorable members. If you look at the second quarter, again, you'll pick up what was done in this area. The wholesale and retail is at the bottom, almost. And you can see the number of inspections that were conducted in the wholesale and retail sector. The construction sector, which is almost at the top, you'll see that a phenomenal number of inspections that was done there, the food and beverage, and the agriculture and iron and steel sectors. The iron and steel was quite high. You'll see that in the third quarter. On your presentation, wholesale and retail is at the top, and you'll see that quite a bit of time was spent there. Construction sector, again, a high number of inspections that took place there, and then your iron and steel, which was quite problematic, and you'll see that a high number of inspections were conducted in that sector. These are the focus areas, Chairperson. I am working through the, and there's every intention to not only visit a company such as ShopRite Checkers, but some of the other companies that have been identified, I will visit them as well in order to address the senior managers on the problems that we have picked up and how they intend to address the challenges that we have noted in relation to the work that they are doing. Obviously on a daily basis. Chairperson, if there are any questions, I'm open to that. As I've indicated, I'm quite prepared to put what I've said in a report as well. My apologies that was not part of the narrative for this particular presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. But you just need to tell us a story that one understands that in the shop right, whatever, people are having fingers, whatever. But more or less, what is the story about the shop right checkers issue? Where are these people getting injured? Is it in front the shop for moving things on shelves, or is it in the storage, or is it in the what do they call this? Remember that these ShopRite checkers, they sometimes have storerooms somewhere else. Things comes either from Cape Town to a particular mass storage, and then there are vehicles that take to the respective shops. Where is these things happening? And then now also, tell us some story on slide number, I think it's a slide before this one. Just before that one, is it possible to go back? No, before this one. Quarter one sector inspection spread. You got it. Right, and then in the middle, there where you have food and beverage is just above iron and steel. You see that? You see the numbers there? And then these numbers of inspections or whatever, and then do not tie to the incidences that you have started with from the ShopRite and Checkers and blah, blah, blah. They do not tie. And what informs the decisions of going to do inspections? Do we just sit and decide that we are going to do inspections on a construction site? Or is anything that goes from the claims that indicate that these claims are originating from SAB, then we take a decision to go and inspect there. What informs our decisions on that's why one was saying that one expected some story that you get out of these tables. And do you have any comment just before the members comes in?
Chairperson, your comments are noted, and the information, we filter that down, and this will be taken up with the team concerned, that there needs to be a driving focus on this in terms of the number of claims. In the ShopRite Checkers scenario, the reason why I dealt with the head office is because they control what happens at the lower levels, and if the structure and the thinking is not right in terms of health and safety, at that senior management level, everything filtering down will be a problem. So health and safety, while the workers must be involved, if the senior managers are not committed and don't provide leadership to health and safety, it won't succeed. And time after time, research shows that your senior managers must provide the commitment and leadership to health and safety. And what has happened over the last several years, specifically, and now I'm touching on the ShopRite Checkers, there was a total failure because of the mindset at the top. And what has changed now is quite critical, and we need to monitor how that change is going to affect what's happening at the lower end as well. But your comment is noted, Chairperson, and I've made a note of that.
I'm sure we may not have dealt with your identity. If you can just indicate that the name and the position that you hold.
The name is Tibo, the surname is Sana, and I'm the Chief Inspector for Occupational Health and Safety.
Chief Inspector for Occupation. There, Honourable Member. Honourable Bakram.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there was another comment from the department that wanted to make before questions. I don't know if you want to.
Come again?
I think there was a hand up from the department.
Oh.
I just wanted to comment.
That's why I'm not looking that much this side, because the presenter is this side and the honourable members are this side. And then I'll just try to correct myself. You may proceed.
I just wanted to touch the issue that you raised around the link between the food and beverage and the ShopRite numbers on the other slide. If you look at, I think, Q1 up to Q3, you'll see that the highest number of inspections are in the wholesale and retail, which is where ShopRite falls into. It's not necessarily the food and beverage. Right. So that's why you see there's an increased focus on inspections in the wholesale and retail. And you also commented about the link between what informs the inspections and what informs the what informs the decision. We have a process between the compensation fund and the chief inspector, where, for example, on a quarterly basis, is it quarterly or monthly, where we provide the statistics of injuries that would have taken place, so that it informs their planning for inspections that would need to take place, what are the companies that they need to be targeting and so on for the inspections. So there is that working arrangement.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. May I also just add quite an important point, that what is reported to compensation fund and what is required to be reported by an employer is not necessarily, it is not necessarily the same thing that is report that is required to be reported in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. So what you report in terms of the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act, there's a slight disjuncture between the two. So you might have higher reporting in certain areas on some things than you would have in terms of what is reported to the the inspectorate. So if you look at that as an example, the transportation side, if they have high numbers on the transportation side, it is not going to show as high in terms of what the inspectorate is going to do, because we don't have, we do not go out on all transportation incidents. There's a fine line between what we will investigate in terms of incidents on the transportation side. I just want to draw that important point in terms of the statistics that you're sometimes going to see on the compensation side. Thank you.
Yeah, no, the point what is raising is what informs your decision making to do inspections. Is it just arbitrary, or the number of claims that the compensation fund is receiving in terms of injuries and whatever, does it form any basis for you to take decisions and say, here we are having problems in this particular area, something is not right, or is it arbitrary? That's the only point that one just wanted to know. It may not be 100%, but something must inform you. Otherwise, then we'll just be running like headless chickens, and then without really being informed. Honorable Bakram.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eventually, just some comments, and maybe the inspectorate can let me know how it works. Obviously, if a business has more people, then there's a propensity for more claims. And I don't know if, I mean, it's all very well to focus on ShopRite Checkers, but they might have a lot more employees than the local spaza shop. So that's the first question, and I presume that you're looking at it per capita in terms of the claims and in terms of statistics. The second thing is there any correlation between a business that is unionized in terms of the amount of claims that they have? In other words, are the staff more educated and able to then lodge the claim either through the union or through the business itself? And the third question is, I know there are only 1,600 inspectors countrywide. You never seem to get to any of the small businesses. I mean, we only talk about big business, but you never seem to get to small business. For instance, I know that many injuries that take place in small business, because I get a lot of those calls, the employer doesn't even allow them to report the accident, never mind filling into your statistics. So I'm interested to know what your comments are with regard to small business vis-a-vis big business. And then finally, you have structures in a company like ShopRite Checkers where you'll have a health representative or someone who would be able to handle the complaints, but this doesn't seem to be universal. In other words, we very seldom, I mean, a business with under 100 employees, very seldom has anyone that you could report to. And what are you doing about that, those particular issues? And then also in terms of the provinces, and if you just look at, for instance, the gender, food, retail, and the provinces that are reported, obviously always the greater provinces are the Western Cape and Gauteng. And is that possibly because of their more employees in those two provinces? And you also have a look at that injuries per province. Again, it's Western Cape and Gauteng. And I suspect it's because of the amount of employment that is that exists in those provinces. And maybe you can comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comment, Honorable America?
Thank you, Chair. My colleague has covered some of the stuff that I wanted to raise. We can be provided more clarity with regard to how many O and H inspectors there are, particularly in the Western Cape. And secondly, it would have been useful not to isolate ShopRite and compare their outcomes with regard to inspections with other retailers such as Pick and Pay, Woolworths and Spar. And furthermore, the sort of whether and you have raised it earlier in your comments, Chair, whether these inspections were done purely at the retail outlet and not at the warehousing sort of stores, and whether there's a difference between the inspection would be done in the township outlets vis-a-vis in the more affluent or in the suburban areas, and whether there's a sort of difference in terms of how health and safety matters are being dealt with in the different locations. And then lastly, it would have been useful if we look at the provincial breakdown of those sort of inspection, because it is it's national inspections, and one could have gotten a sense is that whether comparatively speaking, you know, in terms of employment size, in terms of the number of stores in a particular province, whether it is proportional in terms of the size of the province in terms of the inspection. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation that has been made, even though it's a bit difficult that we don't have a narrative report. So, Chairperson, when I looked at the, it's in some instances it's difficult to see the slide number, so I'll just refer to the headings. When you look at the top 20 injuries, you'll see the last two referring to back injury and then just back. Can we get an indication of what is the difference between those two? Then, as I can recall correctly, Chairperson, we've requested that we should be presented with the top 20 companies, the names, with the intention to know as the committee and to give some kind of guidance for the next committee where they should zoom in and not necessarily only on the sectors. And now we see when you look at the slide referring to the top 20 companies, the ShopRite is the only one being named. The others are only referring to retail 1 up until non-retail 14. So we would really, it would have really been beneficial to us if we could have known what is the company's name as we've requested. Then, Chairperson, when you look at the what the presenters said, that a lot of these injuries are minor injuries. I want to ask the question that, seeing that we've heard this thing for the past 3 to 4 years, that it's not big injuries, majority of the injuries, but it's injuries. So I would like to know, is there any intervention from the department side to ensure that there's regular health and safety workshops or focusing on prevention of injuries, especially when looking at this kind of injuries, that it's only minor injuries. Then, Chairperson, I'm a little bit worried when I see that ShopRite is the one that's been referred to as the main culprit. Because currently in practice, we know that in terms of ShopRite, there's a high turnover of staff, there's a high rate of casual employees. So my concern is that even though it's been said that it's minor injuries, we might have the risk of people coming and going, being injured, and some of them falling through the cracks, not even being reported. By the time that there's another inspection, that person is long gone. And that might lead to being even a higher number of employees being injured on duty that's not registered. Then, Chairperson, when I look at slide 15, I see the 37% of compliance, and it's really a great point of concern. But then when looking at slide 23, there's some areas that's referring to a zero. When you look at the sector inspection, even quarter 1, 2, and 3, there's zeros appearing. But when I look at other areas, there's just blank spaces. Can we get the indication there of whether you don't have the or didn't receive the information, or what's happening there? And also, Chairperson, when looking at quarter 1 sector inspection, you'll see that there's at the bottom there's a other, and then there's the last column is referring to HQ. Can we get an indication of what that column, because there's a blank space and just at the bottom it's other 83. So can we get an indication of what's happening there? When we look also, Chairperson, at the different quarters, the inspection, you'll see that in quarter 2 and in quarter 3, there has been inspections in government. But when you look at quarter 1, there's a low level of inspections in government. Can we also get a clarification why that happened? I think I'll pause there for now, Jay. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Chair.
Good morning. Thanks, Chair. I think honorable members have spoken to some issues. I was outside. I don't know whether what I'm going to say it has been said or not. The overall presentation is what we have requested from the CF, I think, last week. And the issue here is the extent of the injuries that is happening. How is it the impact that it does to those people who are injured, and the report on itself on how the people that are injured in the process, are they able to go back to the system, or how are they, their status, they become disabled or how, I don't know, and the estimate budget on the overall process, what is happening there, and the support that is needed to make sure that this department is able to do its part and to make sure that you are effective as a fund. And I think we should have a which is there to the NPA, if not confidential and private, I don't know. So I just have to find out and how best all the provinces can minimize the injuries that are happening, because you see left arm, right arm, big egg, lower big egg, so all those things, it's someone when he's got a lower big egg, it means he must have a supportive something that is assisting him. That's why I want to check with you how the impact of these injuries that is causing, because it's top 20, we're not dealing with the overall injuries that is happening in the country. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks. I think from my side is the kind of inspections that you are undertaking. Of course, I'm aware that you don't have enough numbers of inspectors. Probably when you respond to the question of Honorable America, then you'll be indicating how many inspectors are in Western Cape, in KZN, and the rest. And, or just before I proceed, yes, I think I just wanted to confirm that we did expect, of course, is the top 20 companies. That's more or less what was the basis and the response in terms of inspections into those companies. But it looks like we have got almost a report that seeks to do that, but more in a generalized form. It's fine. I think we'll get that report and then you can send it to the secretary, where you actually table all the companies, the top 20. And what you have done with them. So is the type of inspections. Are you having ad hoc inspections where somebody just simply say, no, it looks like there's something wrong that's going on in a particular corner. And then you put together a number of inspectors, then off they go. Then do you have scheduled inspections, knowing exactly that every month we must go there, or whether it's every 3 months we go there, or every 6 months we go there, or annually we go there? Do you have scheduled inspections? And then the third one is, do you really have targeted inspections where there is a specific sector that is targeted? Like as you have an example of ShopRite, just as Honorable America has indicated, there are similar chains like ShopRite, which actually undergoes similar handling of materials. As he has spoken about Pick and Pay, you've got Spar, you've got Macro, you've got Woolworths, and all that. Is there any sort of targeted inspections that are happening? How do you categorize your inspections? And then looking at the back, the last few pages, and then the inspections that we have done. When you have done it in quarter one, and then you go and do in quarter two, are you going exactly where you went in quarter one? Or are you going, if it was in retail, you are going back in retail but into another shop. Is there any follow-up where you go to a shop and then you find some contraventions, you issue notices and all that? Do we make follow-ups the following quarter or whatever? And how do we do it? I think that is my comment. Of course, is to confirm what Honorable Van Scalvey has indicated in relation to ShopRite. ShopRite, almost every shop that they have, I think permanent staff of ShopRite is not even more than 10%. The rest, temporary or casualized. And then when a truck of ShopRite is bringing goods into the shop, then they move to the street and get temporary labor. Not casualized, temporary. They pick up people, come and offload the truck. When they're finished, then they must go. Those kind of things, they happen in ShopRite. And those that work inside the shops, many of them are not necessarily working for ShopRite. It's casualized people. And then those that are working for ShopRite, very few. I don't even think that they go beyond 15%. And therefore, it should be painting a picture that says you don't have people that are doing the work repeatedly to an extent that they get trained then to be able to do certain things in a particular or safe manner, because then they are being moved and changed, chopped like nothing time and again. These are the kind of stories that one would have liked to hear when you show the number of injuries and then you talk to a particular retail and indicate what is happening in that retail, what generates the injuries, what's the cause, what's the basis of that particular sector having a lot of injuries, and what needs to happen. You can proceed to respond if you are ready, and you can get assistance from the other side.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask the Commissioner or the Acting DG to talk to the issue that was raised around what happens when a worker is injured and the return to work program that the compensation fund has in place. To start right where you ended, Chairperson, the inspectorate, I'm just going to describe the process quickly. The inspectors, all the occupational health and safety inspectors specifically, they will plan the inspections. So there's a requirement for them to plan what it is that they are going to do. Now, what happens is when they go out to go and do an inspection, they are required to send out a notice of inspection. So every single inspector is required to send out a notice of an inspection. They're going to do an inspector at a certain place. Now, the legislation itself says that the inspector can go to any place unannounced, in essence. So I can stop anywhere at this moment in time and do an inspection somewhere. Now, the notification is to make sure the right people are in place for the inspection. If we just pitch up, there's a possibility we won't have the right people in place, and so on and so on. So the notice of inspection goes out, and the inspector then goes to the workplace, has the right people that are in attendance there, and when the inspector, after the administrative side of the inspection is done, that is checking on appointments, registers, and everything else, they then walk through the workplace. The walkthrough side, they will take workers with them or shop stewards with them if the shop stewards are in place. But they are required to note an attendance register is kept when the inspector is at the workplace, and everyone is required to sign that attendance register. in the report of the inspector, the inspector is required to make a note of the workers who accompanied them during the inspection concerned. And during the course of a walkabout inspection, the health and safety representative, if there is one, if the company is big enough, then the health and safety representative for a specific area is required to accompany the inspector as well through the course of that inspection. So, very basically, that's the process. Post the inspection, now once the inspection is tied up, let's say the inspector serves one of three notices or any three notices. That is the improvement notice, if the employee is required to improve on a particular situation. The contravention notice, where there's a contravention of the regulations. And then also a prohibition notice. Where there's immediate danger to life or limb, the inspector will serve the prohibition notice, and that activity, whatever it is, or condition must cease to exist. So for as long as that is in place, the notice stays in place, the employer can then decide to appeal that, or whatever the case is. If the notice, if the employer cannot meet the time frame in the case of a contravention notice and an improvement notice, the employer has 60 days to comply. In the case of a prohibition notice, it's effective and it stays in place until the inspector revokes that notice. The employer can request an extension of time on a contravention notice or an improvement notice if there's, for example, a capital expenditure that's going to take place. The other part of your question that you had, an inspector can, there are two types of inspections, a reactive inspection and a proactive inspection. The proactive inspection is the one I described a moment ago. The reactive one is when, for example, out there and I notice something unsafe on a construction site, for example, I can stop, make a note for in the file that I've stopped for that particular inspection. In other words, there's no notification of me doing that inspection. So we do allow the inspectors to go out on what we call a reactive inspection. They can do what is required in the interest of health and safety. Now, if you phone up an inspector now and you report something unsafe, that inspector will within a very short space of time go out and do that inspection. That is, it could be the same day, could be the following day that the inspector goes out. If it's a high risk issue, the inspector will go out and deal with that matter. So those are the different scenarios. There are many other scenarios because we have 21 regulations. There's anything from your house situation, your electrical installation, right up to major hazard installations that we do get involved with. So that is some detail around the issue that you raised, Chairperson. Can you give me some water, please? Chair, I have acknowledged that if I can deal with the Honourable Begram's issues that he has raised, I think, and no disrespect meant with the issue that you raised, Honourable Begram, I think we're dealing with a flawed system if we think the more people, the more injuries, the more acceptable that is. If a system's working, the system and the mindset is zero harm. That is what we are looking at. People should not be injured at the workplace. That is where we start from. That's the premise. So where you have injuries taking place, it means that the system has a failure or fault in it or flaw in it, and that needs to be fixed. A system that is working can lead to no injuries at the workplace or no lost time in terms of the employee working at any workplace. So even when that issue was raised by ShopRite itself with me, I did not accept it, and I said that to them as well, that there's a flaw in the thinking when we think that because I have a high number, I'm going to have the highest number of injuries. That's not the case. If they can reduce this substantially, obviously there's going to be a very good case for everyone else to deal with health and safety in the country, if you're a big employer. So we are saying fix up, start with your risk assessment, amongst other things, put your structures in place, get your system working, and then we talk again. But it's clear your system's not working. And when you look at the last integrated report, which I spoke to them about, they talk about a good system in health and safety, or a system that is fantastic. And I said, that's not the case. It's a contradiction when you look at the fact that they are having the types of claims that we are presenting them with. So we accept the situation where an employer comes to the party and says, we will make our health and safety work, and we will move forward from there. I think the Honourable Member raised an interesting issue that is probably good for research, and that is, are there less injuries in terms of unionised workforce? I can't answer that question. However, I can say that whether or not there is union representation there, we do find that injuries are taking, that there are still injuries taking place. Yeah, we are trying to get them involved in the health and safety aspect when we do go onto the work site, but I'm not able to answer the question at the level that the member, the Honourable Member, is requiring the response. The issue that the Department of Labour is only involved in big employers is not correct. The Department of Labour does inspections across the board, big employers and small employers. So we don't only just make a focus on big employers. Chair, if I may just quickly have a... Excuse me.
I think also our guest decides. You can clean that table. It's not for us only. We have tried to count with you, but we did not know how many gonna come. But we knew that you are coming. Then you can clean the table there.
Chair, thank you. An issue that we are going to look at going forward, and some of the countries globally do have different programs for different components of our society, such as, for example, a program for the youth in terms of health and safety, a program for women in safety and so on. And we acknowledge that the safety field is not necessarily always catered for women. And that is something that we need to address going forward. So where the Honourable Bagram does raise the issue around the food retail and the gender component, it is something that I think in the new financial year we need to look at and address in the detail that we need to report back on in the future. At this moment, I wouldn't be able to give you a lot of detail around that. Suffice it to say that our new strategy will deal with this issue. Around gender issues and so on, and youth. The Honourable Bagram touched on an issue around the structures in a company such as ShopRite. Not all companies have someone that a report can be made to. I'm not 100% clear on that. I don't know if we can come back to that one in a moment. The number of inspectors in the country, I would need to provide you with the detail around that. It's around about 15 to 20, but the number, we are adding numbers to our inspectorate. There was a push to employ more, to fill vacancies. So that has been done in the Western Cape as well. Why isolate ShopRite? Right at the outset, I said this is one of the companies that I visited. I want to visit all the head offices, and the others will be visited as well. Your Woolworths, your Spars, and so on. But that doesn't mean that we are not inspecting the companies concerned. we do inspections, as I've tried to indicate in the report. In the last three quarters, we have been engaging the wholesale and retail sector in terms of health and safety inspections. The inspections take place at various levels, not just at the store level, and I do acknowledge that you have different components to different stores. You'll have the stores that are owned by the mother body, like ShopRite, Checkers. Then you'll have those that might have a franchise type setup and so on. And these issues are raised with the company, that they need to make sure that the message goes across the board and not just stays with the mother body company in terms of the work that we are doing. Our inspections are not just done in the main metros. Our inspections are done across the board throughout the country. So you won't find, for example, that if I can use a very poor example, we're doing inspections in Joburg city centre and not in Soweto, as an example, or anywhere else. There's no preferential treatment in terms of health and safety. So we do go all over in terms of our inspections, Chairperson. The issue around the number of inspectors per province and the ratio, if I may provide that information as indicated, you do have the provinces such as Gauteng and KZN. They do have the highest number of inspectors. Your Western Cape has a high level of activity, and then we look at the, for example, your Eastern Cape, that also has quite a bit of activity, so you'll find a bigger number of inspectors in those areas. When you look at your Free State and your Limpopo, for example, sometimes the inspectors are able to do more inspections, but it doesn't talk to more inspectors being present there. There is a standard number of inspections that an inspector is required to do on a monthly basis in terms of health and safety, but you find that they exceed those numbers in some cases and in some quarters. If I may go on to the Honourable Ms. Van Schalkwyk, in terms of the top 20 injuries, the back injuries, that is something that we'll look at and report back on. Back injuries can be taking place for a number of reasons. And in this particular instance, you would, and Chairperson, you used the words early on, material handling. You would expect that to be in a material handling component, such as, for example, your warehousing, or not in the shop front, but at the back, where there's a lot of movement and so on. That's where you'd expect that sort of thing. But I think you made it very clear that that is the kind of detail that you're looking for and that we'll need to report on. If I may repeat something that the Honourable Ms. Van Schalkwyk has raised, which I acknowledge the top 20 companies, we will definitely report on that going into the future. I did not intend to only raise ShopRite Checkers, but what I'm doing is I'm raising it as an example that this is the one that they had a big number. I went to them personally and I said, get your house in order. And in future, the intention is to do the same across the board. Get your house in order. Your high number of incidents is not acceptable. Your high number of claims, because it's also adding a burden onto the compensation fund. So we want to address those issues. We will definitely, all the names of the companies are available. They are there. We can give you that information. There was no intention to hide any name from you. A very, very pertinent question that you raised. A lot of injuries are minor injuries. Is there any intervention to ensure that there is a regular OHS workshops? We do from time to time host workshops. Now, for example, now in KZN, we're going to be running with a construction in Daba. You will recall that there's been a high number of construction incidents in KZN. So it's something that we are targeting to do in KZN because of the high problem that we have there. So we do these workshops and so on from time to time in different areas. I acknowledge what the Honourable Ms. van Schalkwyk has put forward, the high turnover of staff and the challenge that that can present. And it's definitely an area again that we need to look at, just what exactly is happening in that area with regard to what you're referring to. The zero inspections in some of the quarters, you'll see, for example, I think it's the third quarter for the Eastern Cape, that there's nothing that is indicated in their blocks. There are specific areas. We did not have a report for the different sectors that they've done in that period, but it doesn't mean they did nothing. I've put their total in, but there's definitely inspections that they do. The zero inspections for some of the provinces, that is what we've gotten from them, and we don't put numbers wherever. We put exactly what they give us, we put in, and we focus on that. For some of the provinces where the zero is, they've utilized their resources in areas where they found the need to be greatest. For example, if there's been a focus on construction, let's say by KZN, they would have thrown all their resources in there, and you'll see that most of the inspections in that court could be as high as 70%, because they might have found that there's an unacceptable pick up in construction-related things in their particular province. The other component that you raise, for example, if you take HQ, and the number that you raised early on, I think, was 88. That particular one, the head office does audits as opposed to inspections at different companies. So they'll go out to an approved inspection authority. We have what we call approved inspection authorities that do very specialized work, work that the inspectors used to do many years ago. As part of the self-regulatory framework, we put in place, or we've changed policy, where these specialized components can now do work. For example, if you take the lift industry, you'll have an approved inspection authority engaged there. Your pressure equipment industry, you'll have an approved inspection authority there. So they get accreditation from what we call SANAS, South African National Accreditation Systems. They get that accreditation, they get approval from the Department of Labor, then afterwards we have to go and audit them to make sure they're doing the work in line with what we require them to do. So what we do is those audits are the ones that are being reflected, as opposed to an inspection at a shop like ShopRite or any other shop. So those inspectors should not be engaged in that. The only other thing that head office does specifically is diving. There were two divers there, and they might do inspections which might reflect there. But otherwise, the rest are all audits. The other component that I've raised is you might find that they do... We deal very broadly with very many sectors. So you'll find that in some provinces they might have done a one-off inspection on that particular thing, and they've slotted it under other, because we're not going to have a huge list that we can't control. So they would have slotted it under that. And I do acknowledge there's quite a number, for example, in the Western Cape that you might have picked up. You raise an important point when you look at from quarter one to quarter three, why have we done more inspections in government buildings? Chairperson, we have found that there's been quite a number of complaints coming from workers in government buildings, and those complaints we have to attend to, and I'm sure it's now public knowledge. You'll remember the firefighters that died in Joburg. You will recall the Civitas building scenario, Department of Health, and several other government buildings. You'll recall the school where that thing collapsed as well. There are different things. Even in today's paper, I sent in one of the newspapers, I picked up that there was a school that is closed in Gauteng, and I sent that immediately to the province concerned, and I said, get on to this immediately. It is urgent. Go and do an inspection. So these are the different scenarios, Chairperson, that we find ourselves in terms of government buildings now. The workers have woken up in government buildings, and they are now reporting complaints to us. And if we don't attend to it, we are finding, Chairperson, that they're going to court to get these issues resolved where government buildings are not being addressed in terms of health and safety. In terms of, Chairperson, if I may hand over to the Acting DG just to touch on that issue of the return to work, if I may.
Yeah, you can ask him to assist you, but you also just need to think, does financial resources limit your capacity to do inspections, or it is not a limiting factor? Then proceed.
Maybe if I can start there, Chairperson, with the issue of the financial resources.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it might have been in the past, but one of the decisions that we took as the compensation fund is that we see occupational health and safety inspection as an integrated or a linked part of the work that we do. So it's better because as a compensation fund, we are reactive. We pay for injuries that have occurred. But we also wanted to play a role in making sure that we prevent injuries from taking place. So one of the decisions that we took internally within the department was that the compensation fund would take over the funding for occupational health and safety. So whatever costs that the department would incur for occupational health and safety would then be compensation fund would pick up the bill. And I think as a result, that is why we are now talking to the inspections to increase the number of occupational health and safety inspectors. We spoke about it last time we presented. The number that we're looking at, I think, is about 500 additional inspectors over and above the current. The total establishment is about 87. So we're now increasing that from 87 to 587. So that's the work. So there shouldn't be major issues with regards to availability of funding for occupational health and safety. I think on the slide, there's somewhere where the issue that was raised by Honorable Fanskalvik with regard to the issue of back and back injuries. I think the same also with head and head injuries. So these are the same type of injuries. It's just that when the employers report the incidents, for example, when they then drop down on the type of injury, if a person has been injured in the head, one may use head injury, another one may just say head or back injury. So I think the numbers should just be read together. I think Tibo has already spoken to what would be the circumstances around which those type of back injuries may occur. Tibo also touched on the issue of the work that the inspectors do to make sure that some of these injuries and so on don't happen with regard to the preventative mechanisms of training and so on. Now, what we have in the department also is a fund called Strengthening Social Society Fund, where on an annual basis we open up applications for NGOs, training centers and so on to apply for funding so that they can then go out into the workplaces and teach workers about their rights in the workplace, about legislation and so on. So that also is funded jointly by the department as well as the compensation fund. So we then give these funds to these institutions to train workers and help. So that's one of the ways that we work to try and make sure that people are taught about the labor laws and what their rights are in the workplace and what needs to happen there. The question that was asked by Honorable Teko on the issue of what happens to people that are injured and when do they get back, do they get back into the system. When we look at the nature of the injuries that gets reported to the compensation fund and the claims that gets paid out, a substantial portion or majority of the claims are those that result in temporary disablement. So that's why when you look at even the top 20 injuries, a lot of them are superficial injuries where a person may be off work maybe for a month or two. So in cases like those, for example, who would then be paying for the medical expenses to treat the injury that has happened, and because the employer has an obligation to continue to pay the salary of the person once a person maybe is off due to the injuries that have occurred. But what we do is that we then refund the employer for the salary during that period that that person would have been temporarily disabled and not been able to go back into employment. It's very small numbers that would result in permanent disability that would then require a person to be declared permanently disabled, and then that person is then off of employment, and then once he's there, then he gets onto our pension books, then he becomes a pensioner of the compensation fund, and that person will then be paid a pension for life if the permanent disability exceeds 31% according to the assessment framework that has been designed in the fund. The issue of return to work and rehabilitation, we established the rehabilitation unit last year, I think April. What we have been doing over the last year has been now to design programs that are related to return to work, to make sure that when people are injured, we rehabilitate those and we get them back into employment. We are talking to a number of SOEs because we want to start piloting this issue of return to work, because a lot of the SOEs, they do this where if people are injured, they then reassign people to other work areas as opposed to them being medically boarded and staying at home. So we are looking at piloting a number of return to work projects. Concurrent to what we're doing in the amendments to the COIDA legislation, we are now also bringing in a rehabilitation and reintegration chapter on the COIDA to make it part of the core service provision of the compensation fund. Currently, it's just covered within the medical aid space. There is no specific clause in the legislation that refers to it. And we then also want to try and make compelling employers to be able to participate in the return to work as opposed to making sure that people don't stay at home unnecessarily because of the skills that we use when people stay at home. I think I've responded to some of the questions that you would have missed.
You still want to fill in?
There's just a couple I need to still tie up in chat, if I may. The recommendation for prosecution, what is this? The recommendations for prosecution are based on the where we do an inspection, we go out to a company, there's a contravention, a non-compliance. They may then get the 60 days to comply. They may get an extension of time, or they may request they may appeal. So there's an additional time frame added to that. In the case of a prohibition notice, the notice stays in place, it doesn't fall away where there's an appeal. In the case of a contravention or improved notice, that notice falls away until the decision is taken around that issue. So after the inspection has been done, 60 days past, the inspector then does a follow-up, and then on that follow-up, they find that the employer still has not complied. On that non-compliance, they will then draft the documentation that they will then submit to court, and then the NPO will make a decision whether or not they're going to go ahead and prosecute. So that is a process that is followed. If they're not going to prosecute, they stipulate. If they do, then most times the employer is required to pay an admission of guilt. So there's not a lot that we can do around that. The NPO makes that decision. Around that issue. How can we minimize injuries? I think there has been some discussion around that. Education. We try and repeatedly talk to these issues. Another way would be where we recommend the prosecution, that the MPA goes in and does what it can in terms of a maximum penalty around what we are doing. An admission of guilt is R1,000, R5,000, R10,000, that's nothing. So there's very little that's motivating an employer to do things right. But this is not an area on the part where we raise awareness, we go out, we have the workshops and all kinds of things. We are talking constantly to workers out there. We do it on radio, we use the opportunity on television, and so on and so on. And then we do the workshops and seminars and so on. How often do we do the inspections, Chairperson, you asked? We go out, we do the inspection, and then 6 months afterwards, we can maybe go back and do another inspection. Let's say you lodge a complaint today in terms of health and safety, and in a week's time, someone else comes and lodges a different complaint at the same company. We would be required to go out and investigate that complaint. You can imagine you're dealing with a high-risk thing. Now you put in your documentation, you can't go back within 6 months. It would be disastrous for us. So as often as we need to go back in terms of health and safety for different issues, we can go back, but obviously it's something that needs to be managed. An inspector, the rule is they may not go back there within a 6 month period, thereabouts.
You say if an inspector has gone to a particular workshop, then will not go there for the next 6 months. So the employer then, after you have gone past, then he knows that I'm okay for the next 6 months.
Say that again, Chairperson, sorry.
I'm saying that when your inspector has gone to a particular workshop and he has gone past, then you will not go back, or you can't send another inspector there for the next 6 months. Is that what I have heard?
The rule is that, but if there's a complaint that comes in next week, then the inspector can go back. So,
ordinarily, what I'm saying is that the employer does not expect an inspector for the next 6 months, ordinarily.
Yeah. But we don't tell them that rule is in place.
They are aware. We are speaking on public.
Yeah. Chair, I just want to make sure that we've addressed all your questions. Do you go back to the same place? That's what you've spoken about now. And I've indicated that we do have targeted inspections as well. I've spoken to the reactor, the practice side. Those are the issues, some of the inspection types that we have that you asked about. Chair, I think I've addressed a number of the things that have been raised. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, is anything that is crucial that may have been jumped? Honourable Van Scalvey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to conscientize the presenters as well as the entity. In future, when they report, I think it's going to be more important to, because I'm looking at when you look at the top 20 injuries, I see there's a high number of lower back, for instance, and then there's back injury, and then there's back, and we've been advised to join those numbers, but in future I would advise you to rather join it up front. To give us or to give the members a clearer picture on what's actually happening. Then, Chairperson, I would really like to commend the entity, because through the past 5 years, there are issues that we've continuously raised as the committee, and I am really impressed today. When looking back and looking to the presentation that's been presented to us today, We've seen that they've made efforts to listen to our recommendation, but also to implement many of the recommendations that we've made. And also, I think we are most welcoming the increase of the OSH inspectors. That's going to be tripled, almost 3-4 times more than they are currently, and that will speed up service delivery to the people on the ground, and we really want to commend them on that. Thank you, Chair.
America.
Thank you, Chair. This will probably be the last time that we will meet the compensation fund at this level. From my side, we know, Chair, you, for those of us who were here 5 years, where this fund was 5 years ago, and what has happened since the appointment of Commissioner Mafata. And from our side, we'd like to say to Mr. Mafata, it was a pleasure working with you. You were very sort of conscious about the difficulties that the compensation fund experienced, and since you came on board, many positive things occurred, and you were very responsive in terms of our queries and our suggestions, and I want to echo the sentiments expressed by my colleague Honorable Sanskarpe, that we wish you wish all the best, and thank you for your dedication and support that you have given over the years. Thank you, Jane.
Thanks very much. As parting shot as well is that your tables on your quarter one inspection spread, and where you did not do an inspection, don't write a zero. You write the dash. Then where you have done an inspection, then you have found no problem. That's where you put a zero. Because otherwise, if it's just zeros, then it looks like that particular area, there's no problems, whereas we have not actually done the inspection. So it must separate where you have not done the inspections and where you have done and you have found nothing. And then separate them. Also, try and entertain what Honorable Bakram has indicated, the per capita information. And just try and interpret it and get the story out of it. Definitely, of course, is what you are saying is that one injury, of course, is one injury too much. But the fact of the matter also that you can't write off is that a shop with 100 pupils and a shop with 10 pupils, then these two different scenarios when it comes to the interactions of people and the interactions with either machines and the rest in that particular area, and also the ease of training and verifying or ensuring that the training has gone correctly. You see, when you've got many people, you take them in a workshop, I'm sure you should be knowing as government, when you take officials to a workshop and they are 100, then you find that the other officials will spend half of the day with a cell phone outside. But at the end of the day, we are going to write them that they attended the workshop. Then you expect that they are now knowledgeable after that workshop. Whereas the person has been outside with a phone doing all sorts of things. But if they are 10, you are able to manage them. Then the quality of training then is different than when you are training 100 or 200 people fully in the hall. So it may well be wise is to look at the figures of ShopRite and say, but out of the total employees of ShopRite in this particular shop, so many accidents, what is that? What's the percentage of the total? And you may get a story that may also assist you to actually focus on how you handle, you deal with them. And also possibly understanding their challenges so that then you can devise corrective measures. I think that's all what one wanted to say. Thanks for having graced this parliament on the last weeks of it, of the fifth parliament. And we hope that you'll continue, and that additional information, then make sure that you send to the secretary. And then those that will come after us, then will entertain the information and make sure that they proceed with the rest of the program of ensuring that this entity does what it is supposed to do. And I think we'll appreciate the increase in numbers of inspectors so that you are not necessarily reactive all the time. You have got capacity for proactive inspections. You know, if the companies will do the right things, if every day then they know that the inspector may pop in, then they are likely to do the right things. But that's why I was just a little bit shivering when I heard that when an inspector has gone to the shop, then there is a rule or a guideline that says, no, we will ordinarily not send another inspector there for the next 6 months. Should that be very clear to some of the employees, especially the construction sites? And then things would not go right. I'm sure honorable members, it's only America that was there. Yeah. When we went to Macro in Free State. As we were walking into Macro, then a truck came with fire extinguishers, now coming to replace fire extinguishers, because we are coming there, you see. So actually our visit there have assisted Macro. We don't know whether those fire extinguishers then are still there, whether they only came for us and then when we went to them, they've been moved again to another shop where the inspectors will be coming. I don't know. But that possibility is there, that when you do announce visit, then people prepare for you. They prepare for you. They may be having the set of fire extinguishers with the latest days of replenishing and the rest. And if you are going to a shop in Khayelitsha, then they take them to Khayelitsha. Then if tomorrow then you are going to Rondebosch, then they will take them then to the shop in Rondebosch, then they put them there. Then you come, then you find everything is fine, then you tick the boxes, then they take those things, they go and put in store. And then there's nothing. For the next 6 months, they know you're not coming. They're not worried. So, the trick of inspection is when the people to be inspected are not 100% sure when you are coming. That is what makes people to be vigilant and do the right thing. Thank you very much. We thank you for having spoken to us and allowing us also to speak to you. And we hope that all what we have discussed here will contribute to the betterment of your work, and also assist the compensation fund with the reduction in claims or frivolous claims because of those minor injuries. Thank you very much. Can we get now the SEE, and then we can give ourselves some 2 minutes while this exchange is happening. Thanks.
forgot to say.
Okay, I'm going to give it back to you.
Don't we have our contact details?
Oh, sorry. I don't know. Mr. T.
Whom you don't have contact?
Mr. T. Ball. What's his surname? It's Suzanne, isn't it? I think
yeah.
It's Suzanne, okay.
I'm going to interrupt you.
When you are ready, we are all yours, brother. But you don't have all the time. We should have dealt with everything else around our first 12 to 1. Proceed.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and for affording us this opportunity. I brought with me the managers, directors that are responsible for the different portfolios, and at least two factory managers that are responsible for two factories that are here in the Cape, the Epping and the Dameni factory. Those are the managers sitting right at the back. And the idea, Honorable Chairperson, is also to, apart from sharing the pain, that they also begin to realize the importance that honorable members put to this institution that we are responsible for. Honorable members may recall that within the public employment services, we run two types of programs that are targeting people with disabilities. The first one has to do with the set of organizations that we give subsidies to, mainly private. We give a subsidy of 800 rand to each person employed in the private organizations. The main aim is to encourage a situation where people with disabilities are taken off the social grid and they become economic active citizens, and in the process they also become gainfully employed and they earn more than what the social grant system will do. And we have 8 such organizations. We should have had 10 employing about 700. Next year, that number will increase to about 1,400 because the Treasury doubled our subsidies in that area, given the impact. Now, the second set of organizations or people that we fund are those that are within the employ of the government, spread across the 12 factories that we run. And this is why I brought the managers. Now, when honorable members said, come and talk to us about SEE, we tried as much as we can to cover a whole range of issues as per your directive, honorable chairperson. And we won't go through all the slides. You'll notice that we cover 7 broad areas, and I'm going to quickly go through all of them, but just highlighting number of major areas. Slide number 3 talks to the structure of the organization. Now, apart from the chief executive officer that we are currently in a process of employing, who would over and above its structure. It has its internal management structure, but it is also subjected to other overseeing bodies, such as the National Risk Committee and the Audit Committee, because they are still part of DOL. Even their annual report and their APP forms part of the department. On slide number 4, honorable members can see the breakdown. Now, in the SEE, we have two types of employees there. The employees that we call administrative support are about 131. Those are staff members that are employed in terms of the Public Service Act. They fall under the Department of Labor. They are seconded and spread throughout the institutions to support and enable workers with disabilities to produce the various products that we sell. The second group of employees are those that we call Basic Conditions of Employment Act employees. These are people who meet or are in line with the United Nations definition of disability. That is, those people that find it difficult to be integrated into formal employment. They normally come from feeder streams like special schools. In our communities, you'll find that over and above the traditional schools that we have, somewhere in a corner of a township or in a corner of a suburb, there will be a special school that takes care of children that have learning difficulties. Some of them are referred to us from the various psychiatrist hospitals, and these are people who normally find it very difficult to get into employment, and currently we have 969, and we have vacancies that we are also trying to fill. I'll skip the next slide up to slide number 8. Honorable Chairperson and members, we have been involved in some kind of serious thinking in terms of how do we take this institution forward. Now, the short is a process where we identify our strengths, weaknesses, and so on. And we have conducted this exercise where we looked at the strength in terms of our footprint, the government subsidy that we continue to enjoy, the 50% upfront that we receive from government departments, payment, the good reputation that we've established in terms of school desks and clothing and textile, because that's where our strength lies, and the kind of workforce that we have that are basically very efficient when it comes to production. On the weakness side, there are issues. You asked about challenges, Honorable Chairperson, and I think it's proper to also say that we have had a situation where, because of our record management processes that were not proper, we have accumulated backlogs in terms of orders. We don't have standardized operation procedures. In some cases where the person taking orders will make sure that the factories receive orders in time and the production happens and the delivery happens in time. Those are some of the things we identified. And some of the machinery we have, because you had to make sure that the bulk of the work is done by people with disability. Unfortunately, some of them are very old, and we also didn't have, in some instances, adequate people to support the various people with disabilities. We can move on to the next slide. On the opportunities side, we did, however, indicate a number of areas And it's encouraging that big departments such as health and basic education ministers made a commitment to the president after visiting the facilities. We stopped with the assistance of the ambassador in China, a big contract that was about to be signed to bring very cheap quality death at very high prices to South Africa. And that contract was redirected to SEE, to the Correctional Services, and to the Department of Environmental Affairs for us to produce the school furniture locally. And the Basic Education Department is doing everything it can to phase out the production of school furniture from a number of other entities, because once they've since discovered that those organizations were charging them very, very unreasonable prices, and the quality of the products were not that good. We also looked at a number of threats. Obviously, some of our products would break, and people expect services, but we have now looked at how best we can also provide after delivery services. Like if you have a car, obviously you want those kind of services. And one of the things we are doing is that where we deliver desks and other furniture, we are assembling local people with disabilities and special schools to train them locally on the assembly, because if you ship some of these units fully assembled, it becomes costly, so you package them and to also take a lot of stuff to do the assembly on site, it becomes costly, and we do the assembly using those people. So those are some of the things that we said we identified around maintenance. On competition, we still have a serious challenge, especially on office furniture, because some of these factories are using high-quality machinery, and the taste of people, especially in government and everywhere, is not the same. And as such, traditional wood-crafted furniture that we use to produce that thing of high quality is not something that they favor. There were issues around delegations which we identified and are talking to the DG. Having done that, we then embarked on rediscovering ourselves. Now, one of the things that we are clear on is that these organizations exist to provide work opportunities for people with disabilities. Now, honorable members may recall that Treasury gives us a subsidy. That subsidy is only increasing by 6%. It's about 150 million. Now, what they expect us is that we also generate income through the products that we produce, and in the process sell them and increase the number of people with disabilities. So the more we produce and the more we sell, the profit is not the money that we want to keep into our account to make our checkbook to be fed, but to reinvest it in two ways: in the recapacitating factories in terms of equipment, and secondly in terms of increasing the number of people with disabilities. So this mandate is also confirmed by Section 6 of the Employment Services Act. I'll skip the slide number 10 and 11 on the mission statement, because those are the processes that were identified. Now, we also identified three strategic objectives, because the more objectives you chase, you start becoming all over. And the three relates to, firstly, increasing the number by 1,000, Now, what it means, Honorable Chair and members, is that it means that we will have to double the existing establishment if we produce and sell, and obviously that depends on securing contracts with key governments and servicing them. Secondly, we wanted to increase our revenue. Now, there's been a debate, and I think when we put the number, we're over ambitious, but when we did the calculations and projection, that number comes down to about 100 million by 2024. But if we really work hard, there is no doubt that we can reach the target of 400 million. But also the 100, that is the 1,000 people that we intend adding, can also be exceeded because they depend on sales. Now, one of the questions you asked was, when we presented our quarter two report, you realized that our performance was not that good, and the question was, what are we going to do during the remaining period just to deal with quarter three and four? Now, we have looked at our processes. Next one, where we looked at, for instance, the orders that we have, beefing up things like exhibitions, making sure that we improve on our turnaround times, because and I'm going to talk to the number of big orders that we have, and also making sure that we have agreements concluded in some areas deliver. Now, if you do those aspects, it was going to, and we have begun to see the results, because during the quarter two and quarter, that is quarter three and four, which was the September to December and the remaining, the remaining few days of March, we have dedicated and we spoke to all the managers to change gears in terms of making sure that we can deliver on the backlogs, because where government departments gave us 50%, obviously they have money that if they don't use by the end of the financial year, they are going to lose it, and they were dependent on us delivering their products so that they can give us the remaining 50%. Now, having done that, on slide 16, we identified four main ones, and we do have other small orders, but the big one is in the Department of Health. Although discussions happened quite some time, the agreement was finally concluded in February, where they came with an order of about 50 million just to test our systems, because the Minister of Health has decided to take over and intervene in provincial hospitals where they've seen delivery of things like pyjamas, linen, pillowcases and so on lacking. And they are really putting these factories under tremendous pressure, and we have had the first batch scheduled for delivery between the 4th and the 8th. The second one is going the 11th to the 13th, and we're talking about trucks delivering lot of linen to different hospitals. The second one. No, those deliveries have been happening on the good chapter. Yes, the deliveries are going. Remember that this was concluded February 2019, and the department wants to spend the remaining money that they have before the end of the financial year. But there's an agreement that given the late placement of the audit will have to spill over into the new financial year. The second big one is the Eastern Cape Department of Education, which involves 115 million. Now, there was production which came to a standstill due to some agreements. And after we intervened and spoken to the National Treasury and the Provincial Treasury and the Department of Education at provincial level, we managed to unlock some of the issues that led to the dispute. We also managed to get them to open a warehouse, because if you came to our factories, the school desks were all over. We were producing, they were not accepting delivery of stock, and now that they are accepting delivery of stock, we are pushing this contract. The delivery trucks have been going to warehouses in the Eastern Cape. In some cases, they have not finished building schools. But I thought what we agreed was that it then shifts to become their problem instead of ours, and they take on the risk factor. The third big one is also the National Department of Education, and this is mainly new schools that they are building, and the order value there is 2.5, where the three-year contract, we are renegotiating a new one. And the last big one is that of the Western Cape Department of Health, mainly the Grootegeluk Hospital, where the Ndabeni factory and others are very much involved in producing the hospital linen that is used in those factories. So having targeted these three areas, what it means, Honorable Chairperson, is that where we had, our quarter one performance was bad and two. However, in quarter three, we've improved our performance by 50% in terms of the number of people that we're going to provide with work opportunities. And on the sales, given the orders that I've identified, we've also improved by 50%. The next slide just shows you where we were at quarter one and quarter two, and where we are in quarter three. And the reason why we have improved, if you can move on to the next slide, is that we had two targets in the APP. The first one was a target of 100 people that we committed to employ by the end of the fourth quarter. Now, as at the end of quarter three, we had employed 96 new additional people against a target of 100. And as we speak, we have already employed more than the four remaining for the rest of the year, which means that the target of 100 we would have exceeded it. On the percentage in terms of sales, as at the end of 18 February, we were at 45 million against the target of 68 million. Now, this was before the departments such as health gave us the injection of the amount of money that I was showing, including the others that have paid the 50%. So currently we are collecting all those money, and in our view, is that by the end of the financial year, we would have exceeded the 68 million target that we've set. Now, briefly, in terms of other strategies going forward to create additional 1,000 jobs over and above the current ones, there are a number of things that we are doing. A relationship with the special schools is something that we are building and looking at ESSA. Secondly, we have a campaign, and tomorrow on Thursday and on Friday and Saturday, in Misha's Plain and next week at Malmesbury, and in the Rand Factory we have a big exhibition of the products that we produce, and I think also in the Minister's office, if members can make a tent there, we have put a display of the furniture which the Minister of Public Works came to see, because we believe that even in the ministerial houses, these factories can play a major role in terms of supplying of furniture there. And there are other issues that we want to deal with in terms of the Act, which we have identified as problematic. Secondly, on the issue of increasing our footprint, there's a lot of work that we've done because not having two factories in the two provinces also had problems when we were marketing our products in those provinces with the provincial governments and so on, and hence a concerted effort was taken. In terms of Limpopo, we have developed a project plan that is being finalized internally, and what I can say is that before the end of April or mid-April, we should be launching the Limpopo factory, and we may delay in terms of the Mpumalanga factory. If you can go, I think the rest talks to the project plan that is in around Limpopo, because a lot of negotiation, transporting of machinery, recruitment of people and all that, those are processes that are happening. With Mpumalanga, the challenge that we had was that there were a number of sites that we identified and we went to MLO, we also went to Standerton, and the areas that have been shown to us would require a lot of investment in terms of public works, having to work on them. And we've since asked the Mpumalanga government equivalent of the Limpopo economic development, because in some areas you do have all those old factories that were established under the Kangwane government and so on, and we believe that we could take one, revive it, because what we were offered in Mpumalanga was a site where we are supposed to build a factory. Now, if we are to do that, that is going to take a lot of time. However, colleagues are going to go back next week and to explore if we can get a site or some of the old factories that we can utilize in Mpumalanga, so that before the current administration and yourselves leave, at least would have either done the sword turning or participated in that process, because this is a project that the minister announced during your term. On the generation of revenue, the issue in the main has to do with concluding agreements with the strategic partners, and the Department of Health basically said if we are able to service them and the quality of our products remains static, obviously we depend on the supply side, then we can meet their deadlines and we can supply the big hospitals, they will make sure that they protect this contract in a similar way. And the challenge now is to make sure that we get our suppliers of raw material to be on standby, and secondly, to protect ourselves against unscrupulous suppliers, because they may exploit the fact that we have a big contract and then start increasing the prices of the material, because they know that we are solely dependent on them. So we are also speaking to Treasury and the trade and industry to look at other alternatives. On the business model, obviously we have to change how the organization is currently operating and redesign the processes in line with some of the new products that we will be exploring. We are engaging, for instance, some of the students and the products. I think Mr. Mafata gave us a big catalogue of products that people with disability are producing for other people with disability. I think Autobox is also on board. The project that Mr. Mafata was talking about on the rehabilitation and reintegration partly deals with that issue, because apart from assembly of some of those products, it also means that the factories can also be used to assemble wheelchairs and other components. The other aspects that we are looking at has to deal with the marketing of the products, the institution, so that we deal with the competition and we also begin to capture the market. We sell not only to government, but we also make inroads, especially in the municipalities. There are bins for collecting that we have actually produced, that we are talking to municipalities on. There were certain innovative trolleys that can be used in the rural areas for collecting water from different places that were produced, that we are talking to people. There was a project on old tires few products were produced, where you can, as part of recycling and taking some of these tires off the road, you can make very, very good garden out of furniture using some of those products. Lastly, before I give over to the CFO, Honorable Chairperson, in running any business, you always also have to identify some risks. And working with the National Risk Committee, the major risk that we identified is that of our inability to generate work opportunities for people with disabilities. Now, as part of the risk process, you then have to identify what could be the root cause, and every section had to identify one major root cause, and then next to each root cause put mitigation or actions that they are going to take to make sure that we deal with that risk. Now, the first one on the sales, the root cause, obviously, if we don't increase our sales, we won't be able to generate adequate revenue, and the root cause for not increasing the sales, the root cause there was inability to generate sales and due to inadequate marketing, and the rest is actions that they are going to take to make sure that we deal with the problem. The second one has to do with the delays in receiving materials, and that's the issue that I talked about on the possibility of suppliers taking advantage, because if we don't have suppliers, we are likely to supply in time, we're likely to lose business. The third one has to do with the delivery, and the example around backlogs is one such, because if we don't meet a customer's deadline, despite the fact that we are not working with normal human beings like other factories, obviously people in the supply chain of those departments can use that as an excuse to go elsewhere, and we did identify that issue. The other one, has to do with the capacity. That is why internally we're looking at replacing some of the machinery, and we have bought some of the machines to replace some of the old ones and to take away some of the laborious labor intensive that may add to the stress level of people with disability and make sure that we reduce their role in other areas. And lastly, on the resources, the organization, obviously, for us to be able to produce new products, we always have to have people who can scout, who can talk, who can make sure that we can look at various opportunities that may come our way. And I'll give the CFO an opportunity just to give you a sense in terms of our financials, and we can then take questions.
Thank you. Good day, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Chairperson, the presentation that I'm going to do is starting from slide 7, and perhaps if I could highlight that this is a product of a strategic planning workshop that was conducted by the SCE management team, and based on the discussions that we had in terms of identifying our strengths and weaknesses, as well as crafting strategies that would assist us in increasing our revenues and achieving our mandate, we prepared a financial plan to the government. We prepared a financial plan for the next 5 years in order to look at the planning assumptions that we used and compare them to our current environment realities. And what I'm going to present to you is a financial plan based on the engagements and the discussions that are currently being held in the organization. So in terms of the key challenges from a financial perspective, what we've noted is that the major threats facing SEE is the low revenue base. If you were to look at our organization as a trading entity, we need to generate sales and whilst we are achieving our mandate of creating employment. And we've generated 61 million rand for the year ended March 2018, which is the previous financial year. And in the current year, we've got a target of 67 million that the acting CEO has alluded to. On the other hand, our cost of sales far exceeds the revenues that we're generating. Which means that the entity is currently in a deficit, cross-deficit position if you were to compare sales versus cost of sales. And the treasury funding fills this gap in terms of low revenues and high cost of sales, which is part of the funding of the mandate of the entity. In terms of growth strategies and key critical success factors, we've realized that our total cost in terms of cost of sales as well as operating expenses, currently around 200 million. That's the value that we've calculated to be at. And for us to break even in terms of our sales versus cost of sales and become self-sustainable in the long run, we need to generate revenues in excess of 200 million. And I think that's where the 400 million was coming from in our planning assumptions. And the numbers that I'm going to present to you today will be the numbers that we're showing the current showing the current realities in terms of our environment. And the current surplus is partly from the interest income that we get from the favorable balance in our bank account, as well as the treasury subsidy that the entity receives on an annual basis of about 141 million rand. If I go to the next slide, Chair. We've looked at the key components of our statement of financial performance, which is the income statement. And we've looked at the 5-year period in terms of revenues, cost of sales, other income, as well as operating expenses. Just an error there on the March 21 column, there's no figures. It was just a copying and pasting error. It's actually one column back if you were to move the March 22 figures back to March 21. So here, what we've done in terms of our assumptions, we have planned that our revenues will increase by 9% year on year from March 2020 onwards, March 2019 onwards, and we've planned that our cost of sales as well as our operating expenses will increase by about 5.5%, which is linked to inflation. And lastly, our other income grows by 1%, which is the subsidy. So we are planning that we will be aggressive in our revenues. We want more growth, a higher percentage in terms of growth vis-a-vis the subsidy. We are expecting a lower growth given the current pressures under discussion. If I go to the next slide, Chair.
But we have not forgotten about the risk profile, the SDE risk profile that the industry is given to us.
Yes.
So we proceed.
Yes, Chair, I will touch on that when I show you the statement of financial position. On slide number 35, which is still our financial statement of financial position, we tried to show you a picture there in terms of correlation between our total expenses vis-a-vis our revenues. Our revenues, you see that from March 2019, we are at 67.3 million, and over the 5 years, we will grow that number to about 103 million rand. So the annual growth rate will be 9% year-on-year. And on total expenses, our expenses will be growing about 5.5% over the years. Thus, you can see that it's important for SDE to generate revenues of excess of 200 million if we were to report or show a gross surplus in terms of our expenses versus our revenues. But what I should also highlight on this slide is that the biggest portion or in terms of our total cost that you see there, it's cost of sales. And of our cost of sales, our salaries and wages for our factory employees, which is our mandate, accounts for about 70% of those costs. And that's the mandate that Treasury provides us with a subsidy of about 141.4. The next slide, Chair, is the breakdown of our statement of financial position in a traditional format. It's the numbers that I've already presented in the previous slides, but what I would like to highlight, Chair, here is that based on the current realities, if you look at what we've been able to produce in the past, and if we are going to be growing our revenues by 9% on an annual basis, we will end up in March 24 with about 103 million rand. And our cost of sales, if we continue creating additional employment in terms of in line with our mandate of about 1,000 additional jobs, our cost of sales will grow from 141 to about 185 million over the years, and we would still be at a gross deficit position of about 74, 76 million. And that is covered by the subsidy that we are receiving from National Treasury. So ours, in terms of the work that we are still doing, we are trying to look at ways in terms of what strategies we need to implement to make sure that that gross deficit that we are currently seeing in this financial modeling is reduced to at least break-even. The next slide, Chair, is our statement of financial position, which is our balance sheet. In terms of the strategic risk register that the CEO presented, we have said as finance and SCM that we are going to ensure that there is minimum stock that is kept in the entity in order to ensure that we service current orders and future orders that we'll be receiving. So the assumption that we've put in here, if you look at our inventories, we've kept our inventories at a high value of about 64 million rand if you look at March 2019, and we are saying that figure will be maintained or will grow gradually over the years so that we always keep minimum stock. Ordinarily, we don't keep stock of about 64 million rand in our process, but as part of the strategy, we will be keeping minimum stock. So that's giving effect to the management action that we provided in our strategic risk register. What also critical to highlight in this slide is the investment on property, plant and equipment. The CEO has spoken to us improving our production efficiencies and the quality of goods that we manufacture, and thus we have provided for an additional investment in our property, plant and equipment, hence the increase over the years if you look at our PPE. The next slide is our liquidity position in terms of our cash flow. what to highlight on the slide, Chair, is that bulk of our revenue, if you look at our receipts, receipts being the income that we receive for the services. Alright, I'm not going to go through that, Chair. I'm just going to highlight then that we are still...
Alright.
Alright. Okay, we'll do exactly that, Chair. In terms of then the liquidity position, what we are highlighting is that there is still a dependency on the subsidy if sales are not increased in line with the expenses that the entity currently is incurring. Maybe in closing, Chair, from a financial perspective, the challenge at SCE is really to find a balance between the mandate of the entity, which is to create employment. The more you achieve your mandate, the higher your cost of employment are. And that gives rise to a challenge in terms of management being required to increase sales in order to support the employment that has been created. So our job or our challenge is trying to find a balance between these two variables, which is employment creation and ensuring that there is sufficient sales to fund the employment that has been created. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Sorry, honourable members, you may have liked to be entertained with these financial issues here that talks to liquidities and what. That's why I just needed the political interpretation of that. What, otherwise, then we're going to get into a some sort of a financial whatever lecture, which may not have adequate time to for it. But that's why I just said you were talking about projections, which you were projecting increases moving forward, and then there was strategic risk that talks to Marut talked to these strategic risks. Most like 33 and like 33 and 32. Where it talks about the root cause, inability to generate sales due to inadequate marketing and sales strategy. And once you have that, that means your sales don't know. And then the next one, the root cause on 33. Then it says delays in delivery of finished, I'm sure you talk about finished goods, due to inadequate transport services. All these things are just dealing with your revenue or your income. But then when you are looking at the graph that talks to your revenue and cost of sales, the pagama is, well, what? But then these risk things here that we're speaking about, which he gave to us, he says, no, we have got these things that are impeding our operations. You come and integrate them and explain to us why you still have a positive projection of an increase when you have got a snake in the house that is actually biting everybody, making everybody to jump. Honourable members, there you are, Honourable Bagram.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. I want to ask some overview type questions as opposed to challenge the actual input of the report, and I thank the Commissioner for the report. We know that with the advent of the minimum wage at 20 rand per hour, with a minimum of 4 hours per day, equivalent to 80 rand per employee per day, that many of the supported workshops, private workshops for the various disability communities, are now suffering. They can't pay that 20 rand per hour, they can't pay the 80 rand, and their staff are being told that maybe they must stay at home in the meantime. I know it's been reported that at least two of these large workshops have closed, and people are just told to stay at home, and can't help them because they're breaking the law. I think there might be an opportunity there for you to step in, to advise them, to help them, and to somehow create an ability for them to stay open, maybe not to pay them, but to stay open and to somehow have some sort of partnership. And I read that in line with what the Minister of Labour has told us, is that the disabled community only represent 1% of our workforce, when they should be representing, I think her numbers were almost 5% of our workforce. And she had put a target of 3%, but we're still at 1%. And maybe you could help the Minister meet that target, which would be fantastic by anyone's stretch of the imagination. And obviously you would be helping the Minister in the long term. So I'm looking for your input on an innovative way of which you can do this, because if you know the numbers of people that are employed in the various assisted workshops in the disability sector, it's many thousands. Yours is, your numbers are pitiful compared to that, and yet you should be the leading light in that, and I think you can be. I think you can actually assist the whole country in this. And so there might be, it might be a way of you being able to make the whole entity more relevant to South Africa and to our workforce. It then leads on to how do you make more money, because you obviously want to become self-sustainable in the future, and that seems to be your aim. I believe that if you changed your emphasis to training and went out there to the large corporations, and I can tell you right now, I've been to a few of the large corporations who would like to employ more members of the disabled community, but don't know how. They don't know how they can actually marry the disability to what they've got, and I think you have the expertise to do that, and I'm sure they'd be more than happy to pay for not only the information, but for the training, and for you facilitating the employment of people with the disabilities. And it's a clear, easy way of making that. You're never going to be sustainable, never going to be sustainable on production. You can't be. And I think most of the disabled workshops that have been going for 100 years in this country will tell you that. The reality is you're trying to create some employment, but government doesn't create employment. Government creates an environment for the private sector to create employment, and I think you are well placed to be able to assist the private sector in employing more disabled members of the community. It goes on to that next issue, one of your slides, and I can't remember which one, sorry. It said that obviously procurement is now not a it's not a necessity for government, and they've taken it off, and you should be actually pushing for that procurement to come back on the statute book, or at least come back onto regulations. I think you'll have a very willing ear if you approach the ministry, the Labour Ministry, on this, because the minister has made it one of her cornerstones to employ more disabled people, and the more disabled people would be employed if it was a necessity to procure from disabled. So they go hand in hand, and I think you'll be able to do that, if you approach the ministry on this. It should be an easy task. The reality is that the amount of money we're spending on where you are currently at the moment and the amount of people that are employed by you, it doesn't warrant it. There's no stretch of that. Even if you increase, you get an extra 100 people, you have a target of an additional 100 people. I mean, it doesn't warrant that expenditure. And so you need to reinvent the entity. I, for one, believe the entity is actually really needed in South Africa. And we're no different to the rest of the world. They have had similar entities around the world, and it would be a pitiful exercise if we lost you as an entity. And so all I'm calling out is I'm pleading with you to say, let's make it more relevant, let's make it more functional, and probably make it more financially viable if we could look at training, procurement, etc. So thank you for that. I am a supporter, as you know, of the entity. I'm worried that if we carry on the same trajectory, people are going to say, how can we spend extra 100 million when we're only employing a few people? We could spend it far better in other entities within the Department of Labor, and that wouldn't be fair to you. And you, as the leading light, could actually lead the rest of the private sector on this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to put in my bit.
Thank you. Honorable First Calvary, is he cleared?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to welcome the presentation has been made, and I can see that there's really swift, there is an improvement through the swift action and interventions made by Mr. Morodoba in order to rescue this entity. Even though we see that there's still a lot of challenges, there's still a lot that needs to be done, and I want to echo the sentiments by the Honorable Begum that we don't want this entity to be lost, because it's playing a vital role, and we need it to ensure that, as I call it, the differently abled people are accommodated, and also to release the burden in terms of the social grants. And I also acknowledge and welcome the input that's been made by Mr. Morodoba in terms of the subsidy that's been given to private institutions. Maybe if we can have more insight in terms of those institutions, because we can see that they plan to increase them even, seeing that it's already reaping the rewards. So we need to conscientize our people out there that government is taking action, Chairperson. The Department of Labor is actively involved in improving the lives of our people, including the minority groups like the differently abled people. And we really want to see improvement in terms of the percentage that, like rightfully said, as being promised by the minister. And that's why it's important for me, even though it seems as if the numbers look small in terms of the vacancy rate, but it's to those people who are differently abled and who are unemployed or relying on social grants, it's restoring their dignity if they can find suitable employment. But also we have to recognize, Chairperson, that when we look at an institution like the ACE or the entity, and we look at the people that they're employing, of course we won't see the productivity level as in the mainstream. So we have to acknowledge that the other challenges and the other difficulties that will be coupled in terms of the productivity in this entity. and those things needs to be catered for. Chairperson, we've seen the contracts that have been insured, and we see the estimates that they're having. Even though Mr. Muratova indicated that it might be not realistic, but we want to encourage them to keep on securing contracts, to keep on ensuring that you get the money to at least reach that breaking point, because we don't want this entity once more. I want to emphasize, we don't want to lose this entity. We need to get to a point that it starts to be self-sufficient in terms of financial sustainability. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Do you have a word on that matter?
Sure. I see the staff establishment on this page 4, where it talks about all the provinces, and but I see progress on the Mpumalanga to say you went and view sites, I think the Davos and Standard and Mpumalanga. But I wanted to check if they viewed the whole province or it was just specific visits to those two. Because I know there are government like these houses and produce like in Glasgow. Maybe it's just I'm from there, maybe I know the area very well. So they just have to check with the subs on those buildings, because I've seen buildings in Glasgow where they're abandoned also, but it can be useful for that area because it's also the tourist destination. However, the financial deficit, I don't know whether it's deficit or the failure to raise revenue, it's a problem, because we're estimated to generate up to 200 million and there's that 57 million. So I'm not sure, Chair, but the concerns are raised, and I think it should be proper if we say the report to be prioritized and it becomes the legacy report that the sixth parliament will look at it when they come in, and the sixth parliament. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, I think that is what is much more important, because you see that if they have sat in a boss barrage and then make identifications of a certain risks that is threatening the entity, then there must be much more energy put in dealing with those risks, a serious concerted effort to deal with those risks. Because if we don't do that, then all other dreams will fade into thin air. Mr. Mroto. I'm just not sure how you're going to be able to deal with that. And when you are a component of the Department of Labor, but you are not for profit making on one side, if I heard you correctly. But then if you are expected to be self-financing, that means your attitude then must be for profit making.
and if your attitude is for profit making, that means you must behave like serious capitalists and drain workers, these employees' blood and pay them nothing for you to able to generate more that you can reinvest into the institution. I'm not sure. It's to me it looks like there is some level of contradiction, because one aim that you indicated was that you want to take these people out of social grants, those that are working here from the disabled people, that they should not rely on the social grant, and so that then they can make a meaningful economic participation. So there's a combination of skills that you require among yourselves and the directors, because for you to make this to grow, you may need to actually do things the private sector way. The private sector way. And issues of financial discipline and must go high, because it can't be business as usual that you just simply say you need X amount of money, then you just walk to the DG and expect certain transfers, and if you are to self-finance. I really don't know how it's going to happen. How it's going to happen. But what needs to be dealt with is, you can't have a challenge of transport services to move your finished product, and then it then sits as a root cause of a particular risk. Because you would have made an agreement with some sort of a logistics company, or you would have just mobilized in each respective area 2-3 7-ton trucks that you have got an agreement per load. When it is they are necessary, they are found, then they come load, deliver, then get paid, disappear. And you have a standing agreement that you utilize them. Those in finance, I think they've got the correct terms that they are using, where you have got a contract with somebody else that every time when you need that service, you phone that particular person and say, we need you on this particular day, then come, pick up the stock, take it across. But I mean, if our attitude would be that we are adopting a private sector attitude, then you can have a problem that talks to transport. When we've got so many trucks and everything up there, all what is left is you and the capacity to pay them to move your stock, that's it. And then you do have somewhere else where you say that one of the things that you want to do is to increase your the people with disability or whatever by 1,000 in 2024. And then
Is that realistic? When you compare that 1,000 to create 1,000 new jobs for our people with disabilities by 2024, and then when you work the production of these 1,000 new jobs, how does it tally with increasing your revenue by 400 million? What kind of production that you expect from this 1,000 that it will generate this for 400 million by 2024? Because you've got two limitations. The limitation on the production side, and also an expectation in the form of a limitation of what was generated in 2024. You have put two things, hard thing. And I'm just looking at it. I'm not sure whether you have you engaged people from the Auditor General to actually look at your targets. Whether there is something so-called smart, what? Smart target, and, that your targets then must be measurable and realistic and all these other things. Because you can have numbers like these, but when you get down on the workshop floor, then one becomes a limiting factor for the other one to be achieved. And then the other one then becomes useless, a useless target. And just have a look at that and just understand the productivities that are reigning currently in your shops. If you have got an extra 1,000, do those extra 1,000 new jobs have the capacity of generating 400 million? And remember that we are not really speaking about people that are like me, that I can just walk around and use both hands, and I've got two eyes, my two legs are moving, are carrying me left and right. We're speaking about the person that one may be one-legged with a cradle, and or one may be having one hand and the other one is not operating properly. And then the question is their productivity levels. You must be very sure that they can create this 400, because otherwise it can be a very big thing up there that you can't even reach, and you find yourself cracking your head. And then we have got productivity SA. How do you link with them? And support, training or capacity building and all those other things. Because surely, like as we're saying, is that the workshops that you're creating or factories, whatever it's called, then you actually need to ensure that the persons that are there are properly trained so that they can do what they are expected to do, at least to the best of the capacity that they have, and then the best training that they have, then it would yield the best production, and then out of those factories. I think more or less from my side, that is the thing. But then now there is also another challenge that government departments ordinarily they pay late. Do you have that challenge, and how do you go about dealing with it? Municipalities are crying, and other state-owned entities are crying because of government departments not actually honoring their purchases or services that they have received that they have to pay. And the last thing, ordinarily the CEO in a government entity, one thought that is equivalent to the DG. Now, the narrative that I have here is that you are reporting to a deputy director general. Is that correct? And then what is the status of your directors in relation to the directors in the department itself? What sort of comparisons are there? And are there no, if there is disparities, are there no challenges? Because some of them, I'm sure, maybe they are seconded or whatever. Others, maybe you are procured, you are recruiting them from outside, I don't know. But once you have, if there are disparities, there's a director in the department, there's a director in SEE, but then there's nothing that links them. And then when you look, you may find that the director in SEE is equivalent to an assistant director in the department or whatever. If there are disparities, how are you dealing with them? Are they not creating challenges in the entity? You may proceed in responding if you are ready.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll try and combine some of the questions because they are related. Just on the last point, Chairperson, the CEO is at the level of chief director, which is the same across the department. The directors at SEE are equivalent to directors within the department, because the understanding, and that's why we had 900 and a number of 968 and 131, the admin staff are people employed in terms of the Public Service Act, including the CEO. They are employees of the department that are seconded to FEE. We use a similar arrangement. The commissioner is having staff. The commissioner is a level of a DDG. He is having staff members that may be occupying different portfolios, but they are employees of the department working for the compensation fund. The same with UIF. So the principle is the same, because in the event that any director may not be performing, we must be able to recall him or her, put them in another area, and then send somebody. So the issue of government departments payment, yes, you're correct. Previously, this institution had serious problems because, you know, the principle of saying you produce products and you deliver and people only pay later. Now, SEE used to produce a lot of products, deliver, and then supply chain people change. And then the next thing, you get a runaround. And you couldn't do anything, because they knew that because of cooperative governance clause in the constitution, you can't take them to court to recover your monies. And we have had a situation where Treasury had to write off a lot of money owed to the SEE. But to solve that problem, two things happened. Previously, we used to have preferential procurement. It was taken away. But in exchange, Treasury allowed us to charge 50% upfront. So some departments don't like it, but this is the approval we got from Treasury. So when we enter into business, people know that. Now, the unfortunate part, Chairperson and members, is that
people are prepared more to pay the 50%, especially January, February, March, when they know that they've accumulated this money and they are likely to lose it. So there's that part of fiscal dumping. But when we deliver the goods, once we finish, we demand the other 50%, because you cannot be appointing debt collectors, and the departments that are working with us know that very well, and I think currently we're working very well with them. The relationship with Productivity SA, there is a formal agreement where Productivity initially was engaged to go through our factories to assist us in assessing the level of wastage, to look at our workflow processes, to make sure that we can bring some efficiencies and so on. At some stage, the project collapsed a bit, and we are in the process of reviving it so that they can also have a contract that we can also pay, because they have people that they employ in those areas, so that they can assist us. You'll be surprised that in the textile and wood, a lot of waste that is generated from those processes that can be saved, and we can use that money for something else. I mean, we're talking about the wastage in terms of sawdust. We pay a lot of money. I think one factory was saying they're paying CAO 100,000 or so for people to come and remove sawdust. And we looked at other places. Sawdust is a very valuable material that you can use for fire brisket. And we're now looking at how best we can use the sawdust to generate income rather than to treat it as waste and pay people to remove it and end up using it elsewhere. I think the other point that you raised, Honorable Chairperson, the realistic, whether we are realistic in terms of the numbers of, that is the 1,000. Now, I want to link this with what Honorable Begram was saying. You're sitting with figures around 4.2 million people with disabilities throughout. You look at our figures, people say, given the scale of the problem, the number of people you employ is very little. We had, I think 3 weeks back, FEE in Silverton invited a school in Refilwe. They have about 350-something learners there. Now, Honorable Chairperson and members, families of people who go to those schools just want something for them to do, and they spend their days in those factories. But they reach a certain age where they have to move out. Now, unfortunately, there's recycling, because they can't keep them at home. They've got a lot of energy and all that. Now, if you just take the total number of people in the special schools in Pretoria alone, East Lane mainly catering for traditional colored white, your social movement, all those areas, the number of people in the special schools is very high. They don't have an intake. In fact, they were begging us to open more factories so that we can take more people. So I think it goes back to what we're saying, that we're trying to remain relevant, obviously, to the general public, is if they see us as another step where people coming from the main schools, the stream, including your psychiatric hospitals like Vescovis and so on. When some people reach a certain stage and when they are healed, they are keen to release them. But unfortunately, because of a record that they've spent some time in psychiatric hospital, they can't get them into formal employment. So it's a question of us absorbing them. I mean, the reason why you also have a lot of white profile is because some of these people came from the army and so on, and traumatized in those days. Some are people who work in mortuaries and so on. So you have to strike a balance in terms of increasing. Now, we said to all of you honorable members that Treasury is only giving us a marginal allocation. For us to increase the number next year, our target in the APP is 150, and we have to show some efficiency increase. So that depends on our ability to generate or to to increase our sales. I must agree, Honorable Chairperson, that on our risk assessment, we may have highlighted one intervention. We are still going to work on some of the risks because transport alone is not going to solve problems. I think when you do, I did indicate that our SEE is also overseen by the risk committee. So the risk committee wants to see risks and they want to see actions against those risks, and we can't shy away from that. And we will also, I think there was an indication also from our list to say we have not looked at all the other issues. But at high level, they wanted us to reduce the number of risks and not to put operational risks, because there are so many risks. If you switch on a machine without a guard, you can easily cut your hand. It's a risk, and so on. On the skills and capacity issue, yes, one of the things we have identified is that these factories previously, and you talked about the capacity, most of them are huge. Previously, they employed in excess of 3,000. So it's only with the loss of preferential procurement that the numbers went down drastically. And we believe that we with the two new additional factories, if we can gain space, is not a problem. In fact, with the new machinery, we have reduced space. You can produce more. Our biggest challenge in terms of space is going to be the storage of the finished product if the owners don't collect. I think that's where the problem lies, rather than the capacity to take more people. That I think we can do. However, we're working with Mr. Mafate's doctors, because he has a lot of doctors in the, they've helped us in assessing the factories to comply with occupational health and safety. We will be looking into additional people like nurses, because when you have people like the ones that we're working with, once their stress level reaches a certain point and they miss medication, some of them may react violently. Some we had a person, and unfortunately it happened on a weekend, who walked into in front of a train somehow, and you know, the stress level, and weekend, the families would prefer to have them at work, because some of them, even when it's weekend, they wake up and go to the bus station because they can't stay at home. They want to be engaged. Because work apparently gives them therapeutic healing, and it gives them a sense of social belonging rather than being home where they are despised and so on. Now, you talked also about the income. Now, the people that we employ at SEE compared to what Honorable Ekram was referring to, and the amount of money that these people are being paid vis-a-vis the minimum wage. The people that we employ at SEE are completely on SEE income. That is why the CEO was showing the figures to be high. They don't earn anything from social development. They are, because their earnings are above means test, they are completely paid on FEE. They don't get the additional 800 and so on. Now, the majority of the people that Honorable Bertram was referring to, unfortunately, the arrangement that these factories still have is that those people continue to earn a social grant. That's the first thing, the 1,400 or so. Now, we come in and pay and 800 rand. And the only thing that we said, and obviously we're not covering all factories, we said to them, if you want to participate, we won't give you the money unless you pay the minimum wage. Now, I'm sure honorable members will agree that if we don't force them, I mean, some of these factories are producing very, very good quality products that are being exported. They are not for local sales. They are earning a lot of dollars. Now, I don't think it's a problem to say let us be fair to these people. I mean, people with disabilities have needs like any of us. But to confine them, and we've had two factories, one in Cape Health and Pietermaritzburg, who refused to take subsidies because they were refusing to even pay the 3,500 minimum wage. And we said to them, tough luck, because if you are getting 1,400 from social development, you are getting 800 from the Department of Labor, and you are supposed to use income from your production to just meet the difference. We think we have been generous enough. But I think those are some of the things that we need to assist each other. The majority obviously dependent on the lotteries board and others. Now, we know most of the NGOs have had challenges when it comes to accounting and all that, which resulted in some of their income being cut and so on. There was an issue that was mentioned around the role of FEE in society. Now, I think I did mention this issue of the 1,300 vis-a-vis the 1,500. Now, the procurement from FEE factories by various ministers, I think, and Honorable Bertram mentioned the question of the role of the ministers. Our minister has been a champion. We've hosted a big exhibition in the Eastern Cape, and one factory, and we also have a permanent exhibition in the Rand factory, and that is why we even tend the minister's office right here in Parliament. You can go anytime with Mr. Nyakemba there. And see the reception and the office. The office that is there comes from the factory that these two gentlemen produced here. And these are the kind of things that we said in the ministerial villages and in the MPs and staff houses. The factories can easily fund. There was an issue around the sustainability. Now, on the sustainability, there are a number of things. The act that you helped pass, the Employment Services Act, makes provision for the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund to contribute towards employment schemes. And I think, I mean, we once the UI Act and the Compensation Fund have been amended accordingly to align, most of the schemes are going to draw funds from those areas. The jobs fund also showed interest, and obviously I did indicate that with the subsidy scheme, the one that we have, it's unheard of. Treasury just doubled our funding because they saw the strategic importance of that project. I think there was a question, CEO, on the funding that I'm not sure if you want to talk to that issue. But suffice to say that we couldn't agree with all members. I think Honorable Fascalfe did say that the institutions are used mainly to restore the dignity of those people, to also provide therapeutic work
and to reintegrate those people in our society. Honorable Teko, the issue around Mpumalanga, yes, I did say that we have gone, we looked all over, they showed us factories, certainly the Kraskop factory in the area. I'll ask the team to also visit, because to us the most important thing is to have an area where we can set up and also have a pool, because we look at a number of things. The factory is one thing, but you must be able to source or have some kind of a population density or a special school or have some sense in terms of the number of people with disability. Otherwise, you set up factory where you don't have a large number and then you are forced to draw them from somewhere. But also on the kind of products that we'll be producing now, that is why the Mpumalanga government was saying, yes, land, I mean, within the areas there, we can draw a number of people. And we were looking more towards your Tulama Hashe bushback area, because the catchment area seems to be much better. And even if it's an old school that we can convert, we should be able to move around that. I think, yeah. Unless if
looks like you're getting more tired. Let the CFO assist you. Okay, more.
Thank you, Chair. I've responded to two questions. There was one around the positive projection of an increase in terms of our sales vis-à-vis the risks that we have identified, which is the inability to generate sales. Chair, you would have noted from our presentation that our initial planning assumption was that we wanted 400 million in terms of as a target for 2024 in terms of sales. And based on our current realities, that 400 million, in terms of our financial plan, we've revised it down to about 100 million to give effect to the risks that we are currently having. And that's not the final number. We are still trying to remodel the numbers correctly so that we put a number that we can deliver on, given the risks as well as the challenges that we face. The other question was around the delay in the delivery of goods, and that can be an issue. So in the past, in the entity, we used double cab buggies for doing deliveries, which was inadequate for doing deliveries for the factories. We have since procured 6 10-ton trucks for 6 of our factories out of the 12, and the order for the other, for an additional 6 is still being finalized. The idea is that each of our factories will each have a 10-ton truck for doing deliveries around their radius. For long-term deliveries from one province to another province, because we don't have an in-house logistics or transport management section, we are using third-party suppliers who are doing long-distance deliveries. It's a contract that we are participating on with National Treasury, and there's a couple of suppliers that are doing long-distance deliveries that we are using. So that's the current interim measure. What we are still busy with is procuring these additional transfers.
Now, why do you allow this to be written here now as a root cause of that particular risk? Because it looks like that risk has been dealt with.
No, Chair. At the time of when the strategic risk was formulated, it was not attended to. And the 6 trucks that I said we have procured, they are yet to be delivered this month. And the 6 additional that we still to buy.
Talamat. Playing games with us. I mean, how do we have this as a risk, whereas already you have dealt with that risk? You have purchased the trucks, but then we're still saying that no, it's a problem of transport. I mean, you've already purchased the transport. And that risk has already been dealt with. It is no longer a risk. You've got the trucks to deliver, and you'll be delivering on time. And sana, I'll have a risk. You see. So, do
When you say it's a risk, then we look at the implication of that risk to your existence and your operations. And then we see the picture of say, hey, you're going to have a problem here. But whereas already you've got the trucks to deliver and do all those things. So it's this risk now don't exist. Those two that the trucks are solving. Delivering on time and just simply to trust to deliver or transport to deliver. Those two risks now you have dealt with. All what is left is to have the trucks at the right places with the right drivers. And also, of course, must make sure that they are licensed. I think the government didn't have my license now. No, thanks very much for the engagement that we had. And we hope that you will succeed in moving forward with this entity. And your team, you just need to change your mindset. You need to operate on different lines, not just like a government department, where people just get in the at 4 o'clock, you take a bag and go. You can't do things that way. If you are self-financing, then you must almost operate on principles of a private sector type. And discipline and control and measurement of production is there will be daily things now that needs to be done. And other people that may find themselves having difficulty. Those that are used to work in the department where their work is not measured, then they'll find it difficult to work there. So thank you very much, and we hope that you will have further engagement with those that will be here in 2 months' time and fine-tune and proceed forward. Yeah, I think that's it. Honorable members, this...
Chairperson, I propose closure. Thank you.
Oh. Okay, this brings us to the end of this meeting. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Your hands because he is not coming back.